Welcome to One Inch Parscary Podcast. This is Kirsty Sayer. I am so happy to be back. I'm going to dispense with what I usually spend the first 5 minutes talking about. So let's just get it into it because I actually was going to do this podcast tomorrow, but I have so many thoughts that I feel are really pressing that I don't want to lose. As you can tell, they're all whirling around and I just like to get them out there for whomever they may help. Because I feel like they're so important and they've been so helpful to me. And I do what I call the following of a theme in my life. I tend to kind of look for themes that are reoccurring, that, you know, I keep getting messages from different people about some topic that has a really common thread, or I've been thinking about something a lot. It's really just kind of been preoccupying me. And then I happen to listen to a podcast, which is absolutely on the nose talking about that. And I get a great insight. And I think we all have these experiences. I don't think I'm in any way unique. But I use these themes to speak out about things. You know, it's sort of my purpose in life, I feel, to articulate things that are going on. Some may say that I could really pull back on articulating every single thing that's going on in my life, and that's definitely a possibility. But there are times where I feel really moved to sort of share what's going on. Not because I think I have some amazing insight or breakthrough, but because there's probably somebody in my circle or somebody who's listening to this or who may pass it on to somebody else who is experiencing what I've experienced or what a friend of mine has experienced and needs to hear whatever the theme it is that the world has been working with me on. So to backtrack a little bit, I want to talk about how, you know, I talk a lot about this healing journey that I've been on, and I wish there was a slightly less hokey way to put it. And it's not in and of itself a hokey expression, but it's kind of, I don't know, and this is sort of hypocritical of me because, and you'll know later why, but it's kind of overplayed. You know, maybe the word journey is overplayed. But that's honestly, I have a lot of words, and that's honestly the only way I can describe it, because it has been this sort of meandering journey with certainly an upward trend out of a terribly dark space. But, you know, there were definite peaks and valleys during this whole experience, and I've documented those fairly faithfully for you know, especially during certain periods of it. But during this healing journey, I kind of feel like I had this one really it feels like a plateau toward the end of it to complete healing is the only way I can say. And that was when I realized that throughout my life, or maybe as far back as I can remember, I've been trying to live a life of inspired purpose. And I think most of us, most decent people, sort of have that yearning. And whether or not they describe it in that way or think of it in that way, I think that we all want to live what we are uniquely, or, you know, contribute to the world, what we are uniquely gifted to do. I think that so many of us sort of have that urge and that desire, and I think it's a wonderful thing. I think it's what gets us out of bed in the morning. It's what keeps us trying it. It's what keeps us, you know, sort of full of wonder and the desire to learn more and explore more and teachable and humble. I think And when we lose that, or we sort of lose our drive towards living a life of inspired purpose, or whatever it is that you want to call it, is when we feel jaded and stuck and dead or in a rut. And that can happen for so many different reasons. And you know, it's sort of a natural, it's also natural in life to experience those periods of time, for so many different reasons, as I've said. But what I just had sort of like this breakthrough, that probably could only have come when it came. When I realized that there was nothing wrong with this desire to live a life of inspired purpose. There was absolutely nothing wrong with it. In fact, there's everything right with that. However, I had it all wrong about what that looked like for two reasons. The first thing, was that I felt like if I sort of landed on my purpose, if I landed on my big break, if I landed on my big, this is it moment, I would feel validated in my existence. And that might sound weird to people, some people, and it might sound completely understandable to other people. I don't know. I don't know if it's a side effect, or I do know that it's a side effect of childhood trauma, that a lot of people just feel not validated in their existence. Obviously, you know, if you haven't been, if you didn't receive those messages, or if some kind of damage was done to you, in your early childhood, especially, with people with whom you had your most important attachments, you do start to get really hazy and confused about whether or not you deserve to take up space in this world, or, especially as you are. Right, as you find yourself, regardless of how you are, if you're in a good or bad mood, or if you're successful or or traditionally successful, should I say, or if you look a certain way in your body, or if you are accomplishing certain things. So I had a very warped idea of how I would finally sort of land on this, ta-da, the angels would sing. I would be on some, stage. I would sort of always see it as some kind of metaphorical stage where I would be able to be helpful to the world and realize this is it. You're doing it. You've arrived, and now you are valid in your existence. You are allowed to be here. You don't have to feel bad about yourself anymore. You don't have to feel like, do I really deserve a space in the sun, in this world? Do I really deserve to be heard? Do I really deserve to have the feelings that I'm feeling? Oh, just everything, okay? And for some people, this is going to resonate, even though I'm not being particularly articulate about it. And for others, maybe it's just going to sound strange. But I had this idea, you know, that I would arrive. I would finally figure out what my purpose with a capital P was, and then I would feel at peace. Purpose would lead to peace. But it was purpose with a capital P. It was a purpose project. It was a purpose arrival. It was a destination. And so, I sort of busied myself with spinning my wheels, really trying to figure out how to get to that metaphorical stage. I always knew it involved helping other people, and that it involved some kind of mental health facet. I was always very clear on that. But it, I would have to arrive at whatever it was, whether it was a speaking tour, or a book, or whatever. It was a big public deal. I really saw it that way, and I've always sort of held that. And that is not an unusual sort of dream or visual. Otherwise, we wouldn't have people writing thousands and thousands of books every year. So, not particularly crazy there. But the fact that it was so tied, so very much tied to, and then I will be at peace, and then I will feel valid, is you know, looking back, it's crazy. It's sad, right? But I didn't see it that way at all. It just seems like that's how you start to feel good about yourself. And so I've actually discussed this theme a bunch. I talked about it quite a bit after I ran a marathon and felt like so bad about myself for so many different reasons. And it actually was like this very unhealthy, the training for it was super good for me. Mentally, I just learned so much just in those hours that I ran. I just researched so many things and listened to so many things and had such a good time training for it. And that was very healthy for me. But the actual aftermath of, oh, I've run a marathon, life goal complete. And yet I feel no better. In fact, I feel worse. In fact, I'm so unhappy with my performance, blah, 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 blah. And it became this whole negative spiral. But, you know, I didn't really learn from that, because then the next thing I embarked on was, okay, you know, it's always another credential in my mind, or it was always another credential. And you've got to do this, you've got to get this credential, study this, blah, 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 start this business, make this X amount of money, or have this much influence on this many number of this number of people. And it was always kind of the numbers were always really nebulous, but it was always out of my reach before you can feel validated in your purpose and your place in this world. So I then embarked upon that. And again, the process of getting towards what I thought I needed to do to become a bona fide citizen of this planet was actually a really positive and wonderful experience. I was applying to grad school and I overcame kind of the fear of doing that. And it was wonderful. Like, I suddenly felt so empowered doing it and getting into grad school. I just was like, yes, I felt at peace and empowered. That was a great, healthy experience. And it felt good. And then as grad school became, you know, loomed closer, the time to start loomed closer. I wouldn't say I was in any way nervous or dreading it. I was just very dead. I can't explain. I'm looking for another word. I was very kind of ambivalent. Ambivalent is not a strong enough word, and dead is too strong of a word, but somewhere in between. I just had no emotions about it. It wasn't like ringing any bells. It wasn't tugging on that, yes, you're on the way to your purpose with a capital P. It wasn't doing that for me. And so I just was like, cool. I was in a really healthy place in some ways, in other ways, not so much. And that's actually another topic for another day, that we can be doing really well in some areas and we shouldn't negate those just because we're not doing particularly well in others, all within the realms of mental health, because it's pretty spread out when you think about it. But okay, tangent over. I was doing a lot of meditation. I was really disciplined at that point about journaling and meditation and feeling pretty in sync with the messaging of, you know, my highest self. I'm going to call it that. You can call it source or God or, you know, your conscience or whatever. But, you know, that sort of like sense when you're in sync and you're getting good feedback, shall we say. So I was feeling confident in the feedback that I was receiving. I wasn't straining for it. I wasn't striving. I didn't, you know, I felt like I was just getting feedback that I could trust and I was confident in it. So one day, I just got this like really peaceful feedback. Just in the form of a thought in my own mind, in my own voice, that said, you know what, why are you doing this? And I was like, yeah, like, okay, obviously, I'm not even going to go there. We all, you and me, both, we all know why I need to do this. It's important. And it was like, no, this is not for you. This is not necessary. And I was like, on paper, this makes every bit of sense. It's the right time. It's the right place. It's funded. I really worked hard to make it happen. All the pieces fell into place, against all odds, might I add, which sort of indicates that it is indeed the next step.
And I just peaceful sense, like, nope, you don't have to do this. And it wasn't like, don't do this, you know, that sense of like restraint or like, oh, feelings of dread or fear or, second guessing or anything like that. And I think a lot of people didn't believe me. They were like, oh, you know, here comes Kirsty self-sabotaging. She's so close to getting what she wants or doing something, but she's scared and she wants to stay in her uncomfortable zone. I mean, I'm projecting a lot about what I think people might have thought, and you know, those are valid conclusions to make, because I have done plenty of that in my past, but that it did not feel like that at all. It just felt like, no, this is not what you gotta do. You don't have to do this, and it's not going to bring you closer to your purpose with a capital P. So if it's not something that you're feeling like, you know, lit up about, why? Probably don't. And I didn't need to vacillate. I did not need to fight with myself. For some reason, it just clicked. And I was like, yeah, like, why the hell would I embark upon this really challenging sort of like course of action, which is ultimately expensive, time, money, stress, most importantly, you know, sort of like opportunity cost of being with my family or doing other things that do light me up and make me feel passionate. Yeah. Nope, I'm not going to do it. And I didn't even talk to anybody about it that I can remember. I mean, that seems unlikely, so maybe I'm romanticizing this. But I was just like, yeah, I'm not going to do it. And then I sort of announced, I'm not going to do it. And I feel good about that. And then within, you know, a day, a week at the most, it became very clear that like a certain, you know, a chain of events happened, certain like challenges emerged within my family that made it really clear that had I chosen to sort of forge ahead with that, life would have been exceptionally difficult, and painful, and I would have not been as available to my family as they needed me to be. And turns out that my purpose in that moment was being as available to my family as they needed me to be, which I was able to be because I was not meeting deadlines, going to classes, stressing out about a whole new sort of like lifestyle that I was needing to adjust to. And my hands were extremely full meeting the needs of my family, and I felt good about that. And I really did need, you know, sort of all hands on decks, all of my resources and faculties focused on that at that time. And I think that if, you know, I've heard and then since quoted over the years of parenting that there are certain balls that you can juggle, and some are glass and some are rubber. And when you drop a glass ball, it makes a lot more of a mess. You know, there's a lot more healing that has to be taken care of. You know, as mothers, we are going to drop balls. As humans with lots and lots of hats that we're wearing, we're going to drop balls. And sometimes we will drop a glass ball, and that is not the end of the world, but it does take a good deal more cleaning up and healing than, you know, dropping a rubber ball does. And I do feel like if I had not sort of just listened to that really calm assurance that this was not the time and I didn't need to do it to fulfill my capital P purpose, that would have been a glass ball dropping moment. And I have dropped plenty of glass balls in my life, and I'm really grateful that that wasn't one of the times that I did. So all of this to say that I started to then sit in this place of almost a thought experiment. It honestly did feel like that, of being at ease and just going with the flow, so to speak. Now, that's not to say that my life was easy at that time. I was in considerable amounts of, I would say, grief. I was dealing with a lot of really intense grief, like gut-wrenching grief at that time, and I was also dealing with a ton of you know, difficulties
in helping my kids through excruciating things that they were dealing with. And so I wouldn't say, you know, life was just a, like, oh, I was, you know, sort of like skipping through a meadow of daisies by any means. But that work aside and that sadness and the grief aside that I was processing, I did feel a sense of ease. It's so hard to describe. But that I was surfing these very big waves and I was accepting them rather than fighting them. And sometimes, you know, when you're in the ocean, and I've described this so many times before, and I have recurring dreams of then what a huge tsunami wave is coming at me. I know from being a kid who, you know, spent a lot of time on the beach, that you can either be dunked by that wave and just crushed into the ocean floor, and it's a very bad experience, even a very dangerous experience, or you can dive under the wave and wait for it to pass, and you can swim forward past those waves. And sort of, I had the sense of, you know, I was doing that. There was a part of me that was taking care of the rest of me, and it was doing that, and it wasn't sort of just dealing with a ton of extra resistance that it didn't need to. And then there were moments of true ease where there was nothing much going on. And instead of fighting against that and going, I should be doing this, I should be doing that, I should be finding this, you know, I should be validating my existence because this is too easy. It's not fair that it should be this easy. That was a common refrain in my mind. It's not fair that life should be so easy and uncomplicated for me right now. And then I would find ways to complicate it or make myself super busy and then, you know, spin out on that and then essentially in my mind fail at whatever endeavor I was doing. And it was a horrible, horrible little spiral of always trying to prove my right to exist. Validate my right to exist. So instead of doing that for a good period of time, even when things were chill, I just enjoyed them. I allowed myself to just be chill and just enjoy it. And again, some of you might be like, okay, yeah, that's like my default. Why wouldn't you? And others of you will be like, cool. And others of you might be like, that sounds like a very big cop-out. And at certain times in my life, I probably would have also said to whoever was like, and then I just let myself chill. Wow, that seems lazy. That seems like a cop-out. That seems, you know, all other sort of labels that were very judgmental that I was applying to my own self. And not accepting my own self for just being who I was. So during this period, and it's been a couple of years of really working and practicing the art of accepting myself as valid in my existence, regardless of my output, regardless of how many people I help or hurt in one day, that I am valid and that I'm whole. And already have, you know, every right to be here, and it's enough. Like, I am enough because I'm here. Now, does that take away? I don't believe that people who just sit around harming people all day, or that people who know that they have a gift and don't do anything to expand on it or explore it or, you know, sort of magnify it, are happy. I don't think that if you, go for a long period of time just sort of vegetating, that you're going to be a happy or fulfilled person. I think almost everybody can agree on that. But I did need a period of time where I was not trying to, when I was not spinning my wheels, trying to prove who I was through external output validation, etc. And I do find, and I do believe that that was kind of the capstone course for my healing process. I needed to get through a bunch of other junk. And for other people, that might be the foundation. And I do think that, gosh, if we could all just start at that place, there would be so much less pain and sadness in the world. But for me, it sort of felt like that capstone course of sitting and allowing myself to be enough, allowing myself to be enough with whatever the day looked like. And honestly, it did take a good deal of practice, and some days were better than others. But the negative voice started to die down more and more, the self-critical voice, you know, which was like, well, what's your big purpose? Where's your book? Where's your, you know, your speaking program? Why is your blog, you know, sort of like derelict? Why don't you do anything with your podcast? All those voices, that chatter just died down. It was like, you don't need any of these things to validate being enough on this earth. So that was, you know, it was extremely healing and wonderful and all those things. And I've sort of given you this foundation, this sort of foundational story and background. And for all I know, I've done a whole podcast about this in the past. I don't remember. And if I don't remember, you probably don't either. So whatever. It needs to be said again, apparently. But something that I've discovered along the way is also that my purpose is not a capital P. It changes all the time. And maybe I could, you know, I don't really have an elevator pitch for Kirsty's purpose on earth. My purpose is, I don't know, like, I don't really have the words for it right now, but I think my purpose changes from day to day. And that is why I bring up themes. So, all of this to say is that the theme of the last week or so has been that of people who feel, who are, shall I say, trapped in trauma because they're afraid of speaking about it for fear of how it would affect others. And also for fear of how it would affect the world's view of them. And that is a recurring theme this week for me. And that's a heavy theme to speak on. And it's actually one which I'm really well equipped to speak on, fortunately or unfortunately, however you look at it. But I'm going to take a little break now, because I've laid the foundations. And we're going to talk more about that after this break. So I hope you will stick around, because I think this, whether or not you are a survivor who has spoken out, or you are somebody who has experienced trauma and have suppressed it and decided not to speak out about it at this time or perhaps ever, or you know somebody, and trust me, you do, who is a survivor, who will at some point need your support in this matter. I hope you'll stick around and listen to part two. Thank you. Talk to you in a moment. Okay, so as I was saying before the break, you know, this is really important for anyone who has experienced trauma or knows somebody who is in the throes of going public with accusations or their story of abuse or assault. And very tragically, all of us do or will know somebody who's experienced something like that, and may well be able to help somebody who is mustering up the courage to do that or has already done that and desperately needs support. So I also wanted to add that on reflection in the interim, since I posted the first half of this podcast, I've thought about how this is really relevant for actually everybody. At some point in their life, all of us have, I shouldn't say all of us, so many of us have found ourselves paralyzed or trapped in some way in the fear of others' opinions. We have arrested our development or our progress. We have sold our dreams and goals for the hollow acceptance of the world, or what we perceived to be the acceptance and safety of other people's positive or just neutral opinions. A lot of people, you know, will just decide that they're not willing to risk even garnering attention from the rest of the world, even if there's a really solid chance that they can help others, and that in the process they can get a ton of positive feedback. The absolute abject fear of negative feedback of any kind from anyone will literally paralyze them from pursuing their dreams, from, you know, fulfilling what they yearn to do, ultimately, you know, scratching that itch, which is doing what our purpose is. And so this is a kind of a twofold sort of little pep talk that I have here. One side of that is, you know, building on what I talked about in the first half of the podcast, is that, you know, your purpose doesn't have to be a capital P. For some people, it is. You know, for some people, they are going to be a scientist or a neurosurgeon or something that makes an incredible breakthrough. They do go to school for, you know, a million years. They do get a really impressive credential. And then they devote their entire life to the study of that breakthrough. And that's amazing and wonderful, and completely valid and needed, obviously. But the, you know, the idea that all of us have a purpose with a capital P, that requires, you know, a bunch of steps leading up to, you know, accomplishing what it is that we're here to do, or even that those people, that their sole purpose in life is that thing that they do, is just false. And for me, I've really come to recognize that, you know, my purpose, and like I talked about in the first half, is speaking to or working with whatever the theme that has come up for me is. And if that is working closely with one individual within the walls of my own home regarding the theme that's been presented to me, that feels really fulfilling to me now. And that feels very much like my purpose fulfilled. That is, you know, that really good sense of, you can go to bed at night just feeling at peace and feeling fulfilled and feeling like, and it's very different from that sense of, you know, I'm now validated. I, you know, my place in this world, and, you know, people's love is assured, and, you know, everybody's good opinion of me is, you know, now locked away. It's totally different from that very sort of insecurity-based desire for validation. It's just that calm, peaceful sense of satisfaction of a day well spent, your gifts well used, people well served. So I'm really, really committed to posting this podcast as is, off the cuff, and not going back and second guessing and editing. And so, of course, it's not as clean or as streamlined or maybe as chronological as I would have liked it to be in terms of my thoughts. But and I can't even remember. I know I started this paragraph, this very, very long on paragraph, with it's twofold, and I can't even remember the second fold. But okay, so we've put that aside. We've put aside the idea of purpose and the big P and the little P, leading up to what I've, you know, been contemplating a lot, and the theme that's been presented is this idea of being trapped in trauma, or even paralyzed in sort of
a static place in your life and not feeling as though you could move forward in whatever it is that you feel called to do. And that is this desire or this absolute abject fear of rejection, of being criticized, wondering what others might think or say about you, and projecting your own insecurities into those scenarios, those imagined scenarios. And before, you know, like, you recognize yourself in this and start to go down a whole shame spiral about it, let's really recognize also that this is completely normal and natural human instinct. We have a primal need to belong, to be accepted by the tribe, by the pack. We are social creatures, and we have the primal need to be part of a pack that accepts us, because back in, you know, the beginnings of our civilization, not our civilization, of our species, we really, and honestly, still to this day, my word, you know, we really need other people to survive. Not as much in a literal sense. Obviously, we do. You know, like, we're not Will Smith in I Am Legend. Like, we need other humans to survive for a myriad of different reasons. And a whole big important chunk of that is social interaction. And so it's completely normal. It's completely normal that the primal fear of being rejected by the pack is going to trigger us to, like, really think twice before we do anything to risk something like that. But, you know, the thought that I had this evening was, you know, back in the beginnings of time, or if I think of, you know, just social animals in general, that they, you know, anyone who can't hang with the pack sufficiently will either be left behind, a bird will be, you know, pushed out of the nest if it's too weak, whatever cannot keep up with the pack on the Serengeti or whatever is going to be picked off by a predator. And so that's, you know, a really normal primal fear of being, like, included in the center of that pack and protected and surrounded. That's a very normal human instinct to need that and want that. So there's no shame in it. But much like, you know, we need to, you know, we have that need to be surrounded by the pack and protected by the pack from the external predators, you know, on the Serengeti, we also, in our current society, or, you know, throughout time, really, we sort of overcompensate to the extent that predators from inside of the pack can quietly destroy us, and they rely on our silence to do that. And so that's the big problem that we're faced with when outing somebody who's harming us. Or, and, you know, I want to focus on that for now. I know that this is sort of a universal thing, you know, worrying too much about what the pack will say or rejecting, as it's a universal life issue. But I really want to focus on the issue of outing somebody who has abused or assaulted you. And telling that story for whatever reason, perhaps in order to get, you know, that person, you know, to be fully protected from that person, so that they can, you know, the law can deal with them, to protect others from that person, or to heal yourself just by speaking about, you know, what has happened. And all of those are equally valid. And honestly, regardless of what you want to happen to you know, what the goal is in terms of protecting others or yourself from whomever is harming you or did harm you, everybody needs to be able to tell that story and bring it to the light in order for healing to happen. Healing cannot happen unless these terrible traumas and these, you know, these victimizations are brought into the light and examined out in the light, and the person who has been victimized is able to see them for something that has been done to them, which has nothing to do with them and everything to do with who did it to them. And you know, I think so many people are just so horrified, and I can speak to this 1,000%, because that's why I kept my silence. You know, I'm just like, I'm the number one person to speak on this, because I kept my silence for, you know, 30 years, more than 30 years. Because of this, you know, just so many layers of terror. I was afraid of rejection by my mother. I was afraid of harming my family. I was afraid of breaking up the pack and being responsible for that. I was also gaslit into believing that somehow I was responsible for what had happened to me. I had been groomed to protect my abuser from the earliest of ages, to pity him, to see what he was doing. So this is the irony, is that I was able to see what he was doing as separate from who he was. But what was being done to me, I was internalizing as what I was. So, you know, I internalized all that pain and shame into my own personality, into my own self, you know, my self-perception, my self-worth. Everything was tied up into the abuse that had been done to me. But I was always able to, and, you know, of course, there was a small part of me, a tiny, shiny ember that kept alive and knew that that wasn't true. And that was the part that honestly just kept me alive, and eventually decided for me that the time had come and had far come for me to speak out, and knew that I needed to do that in order to be healed. But my story aside is that, you know, anyone who has been abused or who has been assaulted or, you know, experienced trauma of any kind, who is unable to name it and unable to bring it to the light, to be and to have and to be supported through the healing, is going to have a really, really difficult time in separating what happened to them from who they are. And I'm sure it is possible for people to work through that alone, but if there's something keeping them from naming it publicly, not necessarily publicly, not everything has to be, you know, obviously, and I really believe this, that not everything has to be, you know, put before true public scrutiny, like I chose to. And honestly, I would never have chosen to if I didn't feel like I didn't have any other recourse. That was truly a last resort for me. I'm assuming almost every victim who has ever brought anything to the light of pure public scrutiny has tried every other avenue before they were, you know, brought to the desperation of that point. And I know that that was extremely true for me, and it was, I had no desire to hurt you know, anyone outside of, you know, outside of a need to know basis. I honestly was really motivated at the time by not wanting to even hurt my abuser. But
You know, I did try everything I could over many, many years. But this is really not about my story, which I feel like has been sufficiently covered in lots of other avenues in the past. And I definitely don't need to rehash that now. But it is about, you know, this theme that keeps coming up, that I keep seeing, that I keep helping people deal with, that I keep kind of seeing the consequences of both the folks who do choose to come out and you know, and out the predator and bring those misdeeds into the light so that the pack can support them. And I wish I could say that that was always a wonderful, affirming, beautiful story, but it's not. The fact is that that is a tremendous risk, and people are afraid for good reason, because they've seen how people have been decimated, how their characters have been destroyed, how they've lost jobs, how they've had, to find, you know, completely different social groups and move, and all sorts of, you know, highly traumatic things have been piled up on, in extreme cases, on top of people who have had the courage to come out and name their abuser in an effort to protect themselves or others, or simply just to heal. And that's just a horrible, iniquitous tragedy. But I can't say that it doesn't happen. And so while acknowledging that, can I still say, but yet it's so worth it, and it's important for every single person to be able to bring it to light, and at least to be able to tell somebody else, and to be able to share what happened to them with somebody else, and whether or not they get the accountability from whomever harmed them in any way. It is just so important for the healing, for yourself, your inner self, to see that you were worth the risk, that you were worth the risk of taking what happened to you and refusing to internalize it, and refusing to make it your shameful secret, and refusing to live with it and let it eat you up inside, and refusing to let that traumatic experience have to coexist with only your confused, hurt voice. Because when terrible, unnatural things happen to us, our own voice needs to be supported by other strong voices to tell us that it wasn't our fault, because we are so complex, and our societies are so complex, and we receive so many terrible messages about being harmed and whether or not it was our fault. And especially if we just see our abusers kind of continuing with their lives, frequently gaslighting us, always gaslighting everybody in their circle. You know, abusers don't just gaslight one person. They gaslight everybody in their circles. That's important. And that's kind of, it's a lifestyle for them. They have to do that because it's a layer of protection for them. And there's many reasons why they do that, but one of them is so that it's an extra layer of insurance, so that if any of their victims, or even one victim, should come out and say, this happened to me, they're immediately going to have sort of some leverage to discredit that person. And so to see somebody sort of going through life, interacting normally with the public, other people liking them, interacting normally with them after they've done something terrible to you, is so orientating, honestly. And you do need other people to continue to
And it doesn't have to be the general public by any means, but you do need at least a therapist. You do need at least, you know, a therapist and a trusted friend, or a few trusted friends or whatever. You do need other people to reflect back to you the part of you that knows that it wasn't you. It wasn't your fault. It wasn't deserved, because if you keep that inside of you and it festers, and whatever trauma you experienced sort of really messes with your brain, your whatever, you know, really good rational thoughts that you ordinarily have about everything else really get twisted up when it comes to trauma and assault. So I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, it's really, really difficult. And this is why so few people out of the horrifyingly large number of victims will have the courage to come forward, because people are rational. They understand the risk. They know from observation that people are frequently not believed, that your perpetrator might flip the whole story and turn it on you. And the just the excruciating idea of experiencing even more trauma and more pain shuts people down. And gosh, that's sad and hard. And I've been there, and I totally sympathize. And I would never want to shame somebody for not feeling like they had the courage or the resources or the, you know, just, you know, the capacity even to come forward. I would never want to shame somebody for that, because that was me. And that can, you know, feeling shamed for not coming forward can spiral you into even greater depths of despair. And it's important to realize that you don't come forward for the sake of anything that's more important than your healing. Yes, it's wonderful if we can protect others from somebody, but the most important thing is that we protect ourselves and that we heal ourselves from further damage from that person. So while I've, you know, really laid bare the horrors that are absolutely possible when it comes to, you know, coming forward and not being received or believed the way we all wish and think, you know, victims should be. And God knows that definitely happened to me. There were other people who stood by me. You will always be able to find people who are good and decent who will believe you. And if you haven't found that person yet, and you have a difficulty like that, I have references and many places to refer you to where you will find people like that. They absolutely exist and they are available to everybody, even if it's not the person that you would hope it to be or always thought it would be. Sometimes those people just don't have the capacity to be there for us because whatever, you know, we've just sort of brought to the surface is triggering their own traumas that they're not ready to bring to the light yet. But there is always somebody there for you. But all that aside, I just have to reiterate that even if there wasn't anybody there for you, and that's never going to be the case. That's never going to be the case. You may not know the person now. There's a good chance you don't know the person. But those people exist. Organizations of those people exist. People you least expected to be an ally end up being the best of allies. I truly believe that, you know, you will find your people. You will. And I know it's terribly scary not to know for sure. But the most important thing is that you're willing to do it for yourself, that you realize that you are your best and
most important priority. Because if we don't heal ourselves, we harm every relationship that we will ever have. And I think so many people are so invested in protecting those around them. They love their circle. They love their families. They love perhaps even their abuser. Often, very, very much. That was the case for me. And they don't want to lose them. And they don't want to harm them. And they don't want to hurt them. And they don't want to break their hearts. They don't want to upset, you know, family members who didn't know what horrible things happened to them. They just don't, they don't want the drama. They don't want people to be hurt. But the horrible truth is that when you are not healed and you're keeping a secret like that, and if you are keeping a secret like that, you cannot be fully healed. You just cannot be fully healed. Because you're essentially telling yourself that you don't deserve, that other people's potential pain is more important than your healing. And that is not true. And as long as you believe that about yourself, you will not have true self-acceptance. You will not find healing. And that will keep you from being all you can be for those relationships. You will not be able to be as whole and present and available and loving and expansive as you could be. You will not be able to be as good a friend, a spouse, or mother, or father, or brother, or sister, or community member as you could be as a fully healed person, and you deserve to be a fully healed person. And even if you're not doing, you know, even if you don't have a single person in your life that you are worried about hurting, you just don't want to deal with the drama. That is understandable. That is normal and natural. But please know that on some level you are dealing with the drama internally every single day. And those internal dramas and those subconscious dramas are a horrible battle to fight. And they do, you know, when we internalize pain and trauma, it leads to physical reactions. I mean, mental health is health. And internalized trauma that isn't spoken of and healed and named and brought into the light has effects on our health, on our body, apart from, you know, the mental health ramifications. And you might be like, I'm doing just fine. But, you know, when I healed, I discovered so many ways in which I was being triggered every single day of my life that I wasn't aware of. And so many ways in which my life was so much harder, sadder, more stressful, more contentious, more insecure than it needed to be. And so I have walked through this firestorm, as anybody who knows me for any length of time or is following my podcast or my story knows. I've walked through the firestorm. It's been ugly. It's been beautiful. I've had a lot of pushback. It's been devastating. I've had a lot of support. It's been affirming. It was a long and messy road, but life is so much easier now. And honestly, it became easier the same day that I started to tell people. The terror of telling people is always bigger in anticipation than it is in reality. And that monster, once it's in the light, shrinks. And when the monster shrinks, your self-worth grows. That is something I know to be true. And while I was very, very lucky to have support of amazing people who had my back, I did lose some important relationships, and I'm not going to, again, I'm not going to whitewash that, and I'm not going to say it wasn't horrifically painful, just horrifically painful. And, you know, some of my most intimate relationships, I was extremely, you know, close to my mom. And that might sound weird when you're like, well, but you didn't tell her, but, you know, we had a good relationship. We had a lot of fun together. And I enjoyed her company. And while a ton of our relationship I now see was extremely dysfunctional and, you know, was really based in me trying to get the acceptance and love that I never experienced or felt as a kid, and was really tied up into the abuse and all that stuff. I really loved my mom, and I liked our relationship, and I really liked having a mom. And now, that relationship is absolutely not what it was. That's a sad thing, but it was worth it. It was worth anything, any rumors that were spread about me, any rumors that continue to be spread about me. It was worth people thinking I was a liar, a drama queen, an opportunist of some kind, honestly, every name, every bad assumption that could possibly be made was made. And when I chuckle, it's a genuine chuckle. It's not a rueful, it's not a sad. It really was once angry, rueful, sad, mournful, rage filled in the past, but I really do feel past that. And when I think of people, you know, using their precious time on this earth to, you know, create narratives about somebody who had everything to lose by coming forward with a story for which she got nothing but her own healing and self-respect, I feel sad for them, you know, not for me. I feel really good about where I am and how I'm able to help and live a sense of purpose every day, which changes every day. My prime purpose is to help others and to be a healing influence wherever I can be. And the way in which I do that changes all the time. But that's, you know, I feel very fulfilled and very much more able and effective in doing that now that I have healed myself and shown myself that I was worth it. I was worth all of it. And I really hope that you, some part of this rambling, podcast has given you something that you needed, either to help yourself or to understand somebody else. Just to understand somebody else. Because I think when we understand other people who have been harmed and traumatized, the world just gets that much better. You know, just even small incremental amounts of understanding and sympathizing and maybe some small nugget of something that you didn't know before resonated with you, that you will be able to help somebody else in the future where before you didn't feel equipped to say anything. That is my hope. If you're somebody who is bravely, even having a tiny glimmer of imagining that maybe one day you could go to a therapist and tell that therapist what happened to you, or tell a trusted loved one what has happened to you, I want to give you all my love, all my strength, all my support. I just hope you will feel surrounded by a warm, huge hug right now. I just am like sending you that psychic strength and love and warmth. And it's for you.
who's listening, this message was for you, just like you have suspected it was, it is for you. You do have the strength to do this. You are worth doing this. It might be a bumpy road. It might be a crazy roller coaster, but in the end, you will find the love, the respect, and the support of truly good people. They will rise to the surface, and they will be your new pack. And perhaps you have underestimated your existing pack, who will show you a side of them that you have always been deprived of, imagining that they couldn't handle this. But most importantly, you're going to free that incredible, healed you and show you that you were always worth it and that you could do it. And you are so much stronger than you ever imagined, and your life will become easier and simpler and happier, more peaceful, more purposeful. And you're worth it. Thank you for listening to this. It's obviously very much from the heart. I'm not going to listen to it before I post it because I will second guess myself. None of us are immune to the concerns of opinions of others. But we have to push past it if we want more for ourselves than living in that cage. And I do. And I want it for you too. I love you guys. Thank you for listening. You're worth it.